I'll come to you, gentleman with the Z Day T-shirt on over here.
First of all, I just want to thank you both for coming here. But the question I wanted to ask to each of you is on a personal level, when you obviously this kind of thing, it involves a lot of communication with loads of different people. So when you discover that the person you're talking to is either a very negative person or a very angry person, what methods have you both found that are effective ways of communicating with them?
Oh, excellent question. Well, first of all, I try to live by my ideas. It's not always easy, but one way is to try to understand what the common ground is, really. And first of all, to understand what they're saying, because most of the time you disagree really on nothing. You disagree maybe on, you know, the facial expression that they made or the intonation that they used, but you're not really disagreeing on anything else. So first of all, I try to understand what they're saying, and then I try to find a common ground, and from there to build upon. And I think that's my approach. I think that's very sensible.
Look for the root cause.
I think the anger and negativity that we find around us quite commonly in capitalist society comes from frustration. People are being socially indoctrinated, basically, to have a whole set of desires and aspirations, most of which are going to be constantly frustrated. And we see occasional outbreaks of hysteria tied to frustration. We saw elements of that in the rioting that took place the summer before last, where people have been almost pre-programmed to explode because there are so many desires in society that people are being fed through advertising to have in themselves and then not to have these realised. There's enormous alienation. It's a sort of a buzzword, but it's true. There, in present-day society, the amount of dislocation, alienation, isolation of people, lack of common cause, all of these things create a psychology which is full of frustration and bitterness. So yes, we do come up against this. But how to deal with it? The way to deal with it is to actually identify what its root is. And it's actually very much the frustration is coming very often from the actual system that we set out to oppose. So in that sense, of course, yes, there is a common ground.
You raised something before about the money. In a resource-based economy or a socialist society, Federico said something about there may well be a use of money. Perhaps you may want to define how you define money. But also, can both speakers tell us what they think about local currencies, alternative currencies, peer-to-peer currencies? And also, I think that what hasn't been mentioned, I don't think, is sustainability. And this is one of the main reasons for decentralisation, because having things centralised is a highly inefficient way of doing things. Although we don't depend upon leaders and people in power to bring about a new society, a rational, sane society, we could do with their help. If they're going to give it, if they're going to work with that change, let's see to what extent we can work with them. I do believe that there has been significant moves in that direction. For example, Jeremy Rifkin has proposed, I can't remember the details, but it was basically a lateral power distribution system. And he managed to get most of the European community on board to say, yes, we need to get away from all of this centralised power production.
Clifford, I'm sorry, I need you to bring that to the place.
I'm not sure if it was Italy or Spain, but they were on board and they were willing to implement the infrastructure to get our power network decentralised, converting houses so they can be producing energy, each individual house and building, and all kinds of things, which would, in a rational, sane society, be in existence we'd need anyway. So these plans were going to go ahead, but then we had this big crisis in 2008, which put the spanner in the spokes, really sickened me, because this would have been a real advance towards a sane society. I just wonder if Federico has any more information on that, and to what extent we can help and influence our leaders to get on board with the sustainability idea, because oil is running out quickly. Everybody knows that, especially people who are positioned for power. And
we have a question.
Yeah?
Okay, thank you.
So in one of the interviews where I mentioned money, again, it was just a snippet. The whole sentence was, do you think money will ever disappear? And I said, I don't know. It might disappear. There might be some money in the future. I don't think it really matters, because money, again, is not the problem. That's a consequence of something else, because money fulfills a need, right? So if you reduce your dependence on money, then you could have money for, I don't know, diamonds and, you know, very scarce things, but the things you need to survive, imagine if you could get all of that without the need of money, then money would be just, you know, a luxury commodity. It wouldn't be needed by any person in society if they just wanted to live a decent life. So I think you outgrow the need of money. You don't put money out of law, right? So you don't outlaw money. You say we make money less relevant. That's how I think you make society better. Local currencies, they can help us achieve that goal much better, because they don't have the problem of the fractional reserve system and the interest rate applied on the money created out of thin air. Peer-to-peer currencies such as Bitcoin, very interesting projects. So we should be supporting these local currencies and peer-to-peer exchange systems instead of the centralized system of money creation by, you know, the big power establishments. And lastly, sustainability. Well, I didn't make an argument on this, but I did mention it when I said, you know, sustainable communities and the need for degrowth. So instead of, let's suppose, you know, there's a bridge, right? If the bridge collapses, in a sane society, it's a bad thing. But in a conspicuous consumption society, that's very good. Because guess what? More jobs. You got to rebuild the bridge and then spend more money on that and so on and so forth. But if you think, if your objective is, and that's how a capitalist approach kicks in, because it's more efficient to provide for that, right? If your goal is to just keep the consumption going, the problem is keeping the consumption going, right? Capitalism is very efficient at that. But if your objective is really to just live sustainably, happily, in a good standard of living, then capitalism might not be the best thing to do. And so what's more efficient? Something else that will replace capitalism. So again, you change the conditions that replace things. You don't say, capitalism is bad, everybody, let's vote against capitalism, and tomorrow we start a socialist society. I think that might not work out so well.
Well, you ask, what do we think about local currencies, peer-to-peer currencies? I think it's absolute nonsense and really undesirable to create more new systems of money. We've spent thousands of years reaching a point in history where we can get rid of the damn stuff. We don't want to create new systems of money and hold them up as something precious and useful and positive. We want to get rid of the money system. That's what it's about, not creating new money systems, even as a transitionary stage. Money is a reflection of the fact that I own something that you don't, and you're going to have to buy it from me. And I don't care whether it's a local currency or any other kind of currency. It could be monopoly money for all I care. But you're going to give me money for it because you don't own it. I've got the right to it until I get your money. No, this is nonsense. We've reached a stage in history where we can absolutely get rid of all of these unpleasant experiences that people have had to suffer for thousands of years, of being deprived of something until they can cough up the piece of paper for it. This is completely, it's antiquated. You don't need to have rationing through scraps of paper anymore. And it's really offensive to actually tell us that this is what we now need to be moving towards. It's what we need to be getting rid of. Because we now have the means, as Federico has ably exposed, we have the means now through modern technology to produce more than we need. We have a population of, what is it, 7 or 8 billion in the world. But I mean, all of the trustworthy estimates for food production show that we could feed 2 or 3 times that much quite easily, even with current day resources. And the same applies to other fields of life. So if we can create an abundance of everything that we need, then we have the great pleasure awaiting us of free access, Free access means the abolition of money. And why can't we actually have a majority voting for that? We've got a majority at the moment voting for something far more crazy. We've got people voting at the moment for a system of war, poverty and irrational deprivation alongside huge abundant resources. If you can get them to vote for that, surely you can get them to vote for the opposite.
And how do you get... Sorry, but you must indulge me. How do you get the majority?
I'm sorry, no, I mustn't.
Through education.
Sorry, there's been a lady here who's been wanting to speak for some time.
What else?
I would like to thank to everyone for being here, because I think it's totally wrong, just thank to them. I think we all deserve this, and we should be acknowledged for this. And I would like to make my point about... I want to start... I don't want to be brief, so just stop me when I... when I got 20 seconds left. So Clifford, you said that a revolutionary is not meant to have, I don't know how you say, like to be the example, you know, like to be like consistent with everything what you think. I totally disagree with this. I understand it's almost impossible to be consistent with everything in your life, with all your principles, even me, I'm not, obviously. But I think your purpose in life, or at least mine, as a revolutionary, is getting to this stage, bit by bit, be more consistent. Otherwise, I find totally stupid and pointless, for example, that we are here. I would like to think, after this meeting, and after reading a book, after watching a documentary, whatever, you always have your time to think over and to try to make a change, or be the change you want to see in the world, no? As Gandhi said. This is one thing. The other thing is just about your speech. For example, you were saying before, like, sir, what's your name? I forgot your name.
Cliff.
No, Cliff.
Federico.
Richard.
Richard, okay, sorry. Richard. You were saying, for example, like, I'm sure you are a very intelligent guy, to Federico. I think there are two kinds of intelligence. Is the intellectual and emotional intelligence. And I think he can be brilliant in the intellectual one, but it's totally low in the emotional one. Sorry about that. But it's what I really think. First of all, when you said about your book, about the signature, signing the book. So I think we are trying to get rid of this elitism, and you are just reproducing a different way of elitism. And another thing is not just about you, it's about the group. We are here. We just have to see, it's just that symbol. Just see how we are seated and how they are seated. It's totally, I don't know if you know my point, what I mean.
Can you start coming to a point now?
Exactly. And I'm coming too long, that's another thing. They are talking about 85% of the time, and the rest of the people just have like less than 1 minute, and then they reply, and they are talking for 10 minutes, so I don't think this is too socialist. I mean, my point is, I think we have to try to be a little bit more consistent in what we want to get, and not just talking about.
Okay, so thank you for your comment.
It's a constructive
critique. Absolutely. Well, the reason I brought these books and I said they're available for signatures is because people ask me. So that was the only reason. I'm not trying to promote elitism. In fact, you know, I slept at their house and I talk to people on the street all the time, and just if you could ask them, I'm just a regular guy.
It's my fault.
Yeah, he asked me.
It sounds really, really bad to me. This about signing. You know, it's like...
Okay. Okay, I was just saying that I mentioned it because people asked me, not because I think it's particularly important. It's because I've been in debates and I didn't have my books, and they were like, man, I'd like, you know, you to sign my book, just because it's a nice memento, not because I'm some kind of famous guy or whatever. So I really don't think that's the case, but I'm sorry if you got that impression. And I think you should lead by example, and I think that's a moral thing to do, and something that shows empathic distress and actually emotional intelligence, but, you know, I could be wrong.
Yep.
Just
after the chap behind you. So you've spoken before.
Yeah, I'll be on that. Thanks. So first of all, sorry for leading Federico astray. Yeah, he's signed my book. I will erase it later. So it seems just as a common thread, it could be defined as the erosion of institutions, whether it's behavioural institutions such as employment or centralisation or actual institutions like institutions that look after money and the institution of exchange. So would both speakers agree that that is it? And so, I guess to back up what Federico has been saying, to demonstrate that we can erode those institutions, maybe on a small scale, but to demonstrate that we can, is that not a very effective way of convincing and reaching a point where we get the majority?
Yeah, I think the problem with trying to erode institutions, as you put it.
Oh, and one question is on what institutions will we replace? And my thought on that is that they'll be temporary. They'll have a life, they'll have a perceived life and a perceived short-term goal, or maybe a long-term goal, but a given lifespan.
Well, I would encourage you to think in terms of the phrase that I've used several times this evening. I don't apologise for repeating it yet again, which is social relationships. That means we have personal relationships with each other, with friends or family, but the key social relationship means the defining feature of a particular form of society. So the form of society that we live within at the moment, which I've called capitalism, is defined by having as its key relationship that of employment. If you look at the wealth that's generated in society today, if you look at how these tables were produced, if you look at how these chairs were manufactured, look at everything around you. Look at the food that you'll be eating later or whatever. The key relationship involved in the production of everything you see around you, more or less, some rare exceptions, would have been that of employment. That's the defining relation, what I called earlier wage slavery. So, eroding institutions, no. To us, that's not the answer. The answer is to question, to challenge, and to end that social relationship of employment. And it's not something you can do by halves, unfortunately. It would be nice if we could, but unfortunately, if there's a particular relationship of employment, which is at the heart of the problem, you can't have half employment. You can't go to work. You can't have a situation where people are working for the profits of their bosses and then in the second half of the day they don't. It's all or nothing.
But you have to convince, and that's just the way of doing it.
I don't see how... Well, firstly, I don't see how attempting to do something completely irrational and unworkable and pointless is going to educate people in anything. But what I think is more important is let's not confuse the social system that we live under with the class struggle that happens within that system. So, for example, when people do go to work for an employer, there's always a conflict going on over the level of wage payments and various other terms and conditions of their employment. And there are strikes, and there are lockouts, and there are points of conflict in that struggle over employment. And let's not underestimate that. And that's very much an arena in which people are testing their power as social beings. I think that's an area where people do actually learn the reality of the system they live under. But that's a very different matter from trying to advocate a social experiment of having a pocket of socialism within capitalism, which I think history has shown us over and over again doesn't mean anything.
Can I ask a question?
I
understand how you're going to move, and I can understand the logical steps for that. I'm sorry, Richard, I don't understand what your solution is, what you're actually going to do to make the change. Okay. I heard you say resignation, and the first thing I thought of, well, how are you going to get them to resign? So what actual steps are you going to take to change the social structure?
Well, it's very simple. The socialist form of society means common ownership of productive resources. So all of the productive machinery, all of the raw materials, all of the industry would be owned in common. How are we going to get there?
Very good. I understand that. Yeah. I understand what you're trying to achieve. How are you actually going to get there?
The way we get there is through education, through the fact that we firstly need to have a majority of people who actually have determined, through their consciousness, that they've had enough of capitalist society and are ready for socialist society.
How are you going to do that?
Well, we're doing it right now.
No, but I can explain to me how you get there.
Yes, I can explain.
Let me explain one point. Yeah. Capitalism will definitely go. I mean, you know, you've seen throughout the world.
I'm sorry. No. You've had a question. You've had a question, I'm afraid.
Well, can I answer the question?
Do you want
right. So your question was, how are we going to do that? And you then want to extrapolate on that. But I'll tell you what my answer is, and you can tell us yours later. But the way in which we're going to do that, at the present time, how is it that capitalism carries on? It does carry on through consent. I said earlier, when elections take place. Admittedly, some of the turnouts in recent elections have been interestingly low. But nevertheless, you do see millions of people making the effort around the world to go and vote for political parties who fairly explicitly will uphold capitalism. That's taken as a given. If we can build a movement, growing movement, which refuses to consent to capitalism, that's the only way. And of course it's not easy. Of course we have a very small minority at the moment who stand for socialism. No one's saying that this is going to be very easy. But look at the alternatives. What choice have we got? The only choice, the only method that anyone has realistically come up with is mutual education to a point where we actually... This is the same as in any form of society. How does capitalism carry on? It persuades people to vote for it. It persuades people to consent to it. And you ask, how are we going to do something different? The answer is in the question. By actually persuading people to support the idea of socialism rather than capitalism. What's the problem with that?
Okay, sorry. Apologies. Sorry.
So I've tried to understand what the plan for socialism is, but I still haven't got the actual steps. And to just say education, what's your plan to grow the consensus or the consciousness, from the present moment to double that, to eventually... 51%, and I've actually hadn't heard any single example of that, of how that can achieve, that could be achieved. But if we extend the concept of education to also what I think is practical education and showing and leading by example, then you could call that education, but you're actually getting more consensus because people are convinced by evidence. Okay, so as long as we like to think that people like to philosophize about life 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. They don't. Okay, they believe what they can see, what they can touch, what they can eat. So if by education you mean, look, I'm growing food and I didn't work 10 hours a day to do this. I worked half an hour a day and I'm, spending half of what I used to. Oh, look, my electricity bill is zero because I have solar panels in my... Oh, because, that is also education. That is practical education that actually teaches people how a different system can be used. So if we extend the idea of education to also practical education and leading by example, then I agree with you that through education we can achieve that goal. But through just talking, we're never going to achieve that goal because we haven't done that in the last 100 years that, 107 years that the Socialist Party has been around. And the Socialist Party hasn't actually grew anything. In numbers, actually, has been shrinking. And the reason is because, guys, you got to show what you want to do. You got to prove that what you're doing is working and that you live happier. And I'm sorry to say, but all this negativity, I'm a nice guy, I don't take anything personal, but all this negativity that you throw around at people who come here and try to have a conversation with you, How can you reach a consensus and common ground with people if you're that violent in your means of communication?
Okay, we've been going for 2.5 hours now, so I just want to take a... Do people want to continue? Yeah? People want to go on? Okay. All right, okay, so the next person who hasn't spoken, yeah?
Yeah, I've been coming here quite a while now, and it took me a while to be convinced that we could have a moneyless society. And some of the arguments I have with some of my friends, one of them, I work for a local law centre, And a sister said to me, oh, come on, you're never going to get people to work for nothing. And I said, well, you do. And he kind of was a bit taken aback, because he does a lot of pro bono work. He volunteers twice a month as a mentor for vulnerable families. And I truly believe that it's just a change of a mindset. If people just kept doing what they do, you know, because work is the essence of man, nobody would want to stop working. And you could just keep producing for need rather than producing all the rubbish that gets thrown away. It could work. It's just a change of mindset.
Could we...
People work for nothing if they enjoyed what they were doing.
Could we have a question?
No, I'm just making... going to do it, but it is just a change of mindset. That's how
okay.
It's got to be done.
It's all right. A ludic lifestyle.
Can I just come back to you just very briefly? We're getting questions now, which I'm glad about, because it's a positive, constructive debate, hopefully, with our friend here asking, well, how are you going to do this? I don't know if you've ever voted in your life at all. But the fact is, people who get involved in these debates, if you actually question yourselves, if you've ever voted ever... You know, who have you voted for? People who go out and vote will go. People will come to a debate like this, and they'll go out the following month. And they'll vote for the Labour Party. They'll vote for the Green Party. They'll vote for this or that party. They'll vote for parties which are in alliances in other countries. And the fact is, by doing so, they're actually sanctioning the use of violent armed force to protect private property. And what we need to do, it's not just simply about some kind of abstract idea of education. The socialist project involves dispossessing the minority who currently own the planet. And I would throw the question back at you and ask, are you in favour of doing that?
Let me ask you a question.
I haven't finished yet.
Are you in favour of rhetoric, or are you in favour of actually making some action, of actually doing something that people can actually see is changing the environment?
Well, I'll come back on that. Doing something that people can actually see. Some messages are able to be taught by example. If our message to you was that people should show more human kindness in life, then great, I can lead by example, I can go and help an old lady across the road, straight away. If, however, the message is that we cannot even begin to solve our problems until we dispossess the minority who own the planet, how can we possibly show that by example other than by actually doing it?
Exactly.
So, really, you're putting it into a false double bind. You're not being honest about the way you're arguing. You're asking us to show by example why it's a good idea to dispossess that minority. The only way that you can show by example is by actually doing it. There is only one minority. We don't have a practice capitalist class in the corner who we can demonstrate on. There's only one capitalist class. They do actually monopolise the planet and all its resources. And I'm sorry to tell you this, but you cannot lead by example. You cannot show by lifestyle why it would be a good idea. All you can actually do is be realistic. If there's a small number of people who exercise control, illegitimately and ultimately, over where you're living, I mean, take this building, for example. We're running this event within reasonable limits of democracy. If two or three people took it upon themselves through violence to actually take control of this building and to somehow deprive the rest of you of the right to even set foot on it when you wanted to, the answer is very simple. You don't start leading by example. You would dispossess them of that. You would actually confront force with force. That's the answer. Socialism actually does confront force with force, albeit in a democratic way. You've got the most undemocratic situation. You've got this tiny, tiny minority who I started my contribution by speaking about, a really tiny number of people who between them control pretty much the planet that we happen to live on. What are you going to do about that? Surely you have to dispossess them.
Let me make a comment to that. Can I
ask you this? I do apologise, and I apologise to everyone. I've sort of cut short on this because I think you were actually offering sort of good contributions, but we've got a lot of people who want to ask questions. Can I suggest that when we break and we go upstairs, you can kind of buttonhole the speakers yourself and ask them to take that up? Yep. Can I, are you okay with that?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you.
Okay. Can I answer?
Oh, yeah. Sure.
So. Once, I believe it was Gordon Freeman, he was asked, how do you get rid of racism? And he was questioning the fact, he was very critic about the fact that they've got Black Month, Black History Month in the United States. He said, I don't recognize that, I don't accept that, I don't want that. I said, why not? Well, do you have Jewish month? Do you have, you know, Italian month? Do you have, no, why not? Well, because, exactly my point, how do you get rid of racism? You stop talking about it and you act like we are one family. Yeah. So by saying there is one class, those are the guys, these are the capitalists, you are effectively creating classism because you don't recognize that we are one family, we are one social group, and we all share the same goals and the same fears, and we all have a family and we all have children and people we love. So by doing, it's exactly that kind of behavior that creates a struggle within society by saying us and them. It's this us and them mentality that created the problem, and it's this us and them mentality that will keep the problem going. And by saying that you cannot even begin the conversation, this is what you said, you cannot even begin the conversation if you don't replace something that is virtually irreplaceable without any intermediary steps, then basically you're saying this is never going to happen. Because you, what you're saying is, unless these conditions are met, we cannot even start doing anything. And then when the question is, how do you get to these conditions? The answer is, we get to these conditions because that's how you're going to start. It's an infinite loop. You're never going to do anything. It's just wishful thinking. Like, how do you get more people to agree with you if you don't have, if you don't lead by example, if you don't live a virtuous life, and if you have no plan of getting there?
I think you've been waiting an awful long time, but if you want to pass it.
I was just going to say that the real ownership and private property throughout the agricultural revolution, which was 5,000 years ago, the majority of our species' history, we were nomadic hunters. So now we've got the technology to create a global abundance, so we should probably do that so we can go back to like walking around the planet and check the shit out. But, coming back to this dichotomy of capitalist socialist, actually, you don't have a capitalist system at the moment, you have a plutocracy. You have a corporatocracy. You have a very, like with capitalism, when it was instituted through John Locke and Adam Smith, if you look at them, there's some very strict provisos in there, that you won't let it go to waste, that you'll share your labour, that you'll mix your labour with the capital, that all those sorts of things came through it. The point is that the system structurally was always going to end up as a pyramid structure that you have now with the wealth trickling down the system, which is exactly why the robber barons and the banks have gone back again and again and again to the trough to get the fractional reserve system back in place. So the point is that if everybody said there's no capitalists, there's no socialists, actually there's just kings and queens and you're their bitch. That's it. If everybody just says, oh, I'm their bitch, I don't like that, because nobody likes to be anybody's bitch, and then we'll just sort it out that way and hopefully build in Federico's way and get people pissed off in your way so that we can get them voting to oust them.
Agreed.
Well, I think you make an interesting point, because it goes back to something that we looked at earlier, in which there's a sort of depersonification, that the individual capitalists like Warren Buffett can be as charitable as they like, but it's not really about what they're like as individuals. And I think you're touching on this as well when you talk about plutocracy. There's a kind of an abstract force, there's a kind of a depersonalized force known as capital. So in other words, the whole of capital investment resources employs, in one sense, the whole of the labour force. And when you think about society as it presently is constituted, that's what we have. We do have these two classes. Sadly, we can't just think them away. They exist in a very real, tangible, physical sense. And therefore, it's not really about having a classist attitude. It's not really about the us and them mentality. It's not. That's not really the point. The fact is that this is a very real thing that exists. We experience it every day when we go to work. Every time we're pushing, for example, for a realistic wage increase to keep pace with inflation, and the wage increase is denied. There's a very clear conflict of interest between employer and employee over how the wealth should be distributed. And the fact that wealth is created entirely by the, in physical terms, by the employee, doesn't matter. The fact is still the employer is trying to take a larger and larger slice of that. Sorry, you wanted to come
actually,
back.
Actually, the wealth is largely generated by the upper 1%. They don't actually care what you do. In fact, if you look at the Citigroup internal document that was leaked a few years ago, they admit it implicitly.
they say the wealth generation is created mostly on Wall Street through the circulation of debt and what have you, and actually consumption doesn't bear as heavily on it as you would think. But I agree with the employment argument. Sorry, I agree with what you say about employment. It's exactly the same system that I was just talking about.
Okay.
Also, yeah. Yeah, but excuse me.
Hang on. Sorry. If you want to speak, can you put your hand up?
Creating false money. It's like Wizard of Oz situation. You know, so that's not really wealth. So I've heard someone say, no, the 1% are not creating wealth.
Hold on until you ask a question, please? Can you ask a question? If you want to ask a question, you can put your hand up, please. This chap up here was waiting for some while. We're back to second time round.
Sure?
Yeah, indeed. we're second time round now. So
anticipation now. there was going back to actually the pledge. Just wanted to make a point of the fact that first off, it's only a very few amount of billionaires have actually gone into the pledge. So it's not actually a real realisation that things are changing. And also, a problem is you can't deny that Bill Gates has obviously stopped a lot of suffering for a lot of people. But by us believing that Bill Gates is doing such a good thing, we're allowing a system that allows so many more people to live in poverty and to die of so much more disease. And I think if you're trying to get rid of capitalism, which I do believe you do, I think it's been mistaken a little earlier on about your stance on capitalism, I think we need to take the power and change to a resource-based society where we can get rid of these issues so much far more easier than someone who decides that it's his time to cure one disease.
Yeah. So I agree with you, and for the most part, and I don't think there is a sequitur in the assumption you're making and then the conclusion. So if you recognize that somebody's doing good because it's measurable and it has an impact, it doesn't mean that you're not going to replace the system or that you are supporting the system. You're just observing something. You're saying, this is what it is. Then, if you then say, therefore, since there are these heroes, I'm not going to do anything because things are just dandy and fine, then you have your... Right, then you have the problem. But if you say, look, these guys are doing something, and I take individual responsibility, and I'm going to do something too, and I'm going to fight the system from within, because I have the tools, I have the ability, and I have the passion and the willpower to do so, and I organize together with other people to do that, then you can transition to a better society. But if you just say, oh, I'm not going to do anything because these guys are taking care of that, then of course what you're saying is correct.
Okay, do you want to respond? Okay, now I've just been told that one of the speakers is going to have to go soon, so I'm afraid that is going to be the last question. But as I said afterwards, if you want, we're going to have some tea and some biscuits upstairs. If you want to carry on the conversation afterwards, I do apologise, then feel free to do that. So before we finally kind of wind up the meeting, what I'm going to do is I'm going to ask the two speakers just to kind of give you a summary of what they've said up until this point. Now, we haven't actually arranged this, so who would like to go first?
Go ahead. I started.
Okay. Well, firstly, I would like to, on behalf of the Socialist Party, to thank Federico very much for coming tonight and for being willing to discuss and debate with us and for making the time to be part of this, and indeed to thank all of you for having made the time this evening for coming along and taking part in public discussion and debate, which is an excellent thing and something we'd like to see a lot more of. I think we've touched on a lot of areas tonight, and the debate and the discussion will continue. But let me round off for my part by going back to some of the original points that I started with and just to tie up a few loose threads. Capitalism is a system of society. It's something very real, very tangible, physical, unavoidable. It's actually the way in which we're relating to each other in terms of production. At the core of society, the economic core, it's the generation of wealth, it's the ownership of wealth. More importantly, it's the ownership of wealth-making resources. And by this, I don't just mean financial chicanery that these people talk about with the top 1% creating financial loops and so on. And we're talking about the real physical creation through human labour of actual wealth. And the relationship of production that exists today is one of employment. It's outlived its usefulness. So therefore, we don't need any very long transition. we don't need generations of example setting or moral regeneration or reformation. We're ready. Society is actually technologically ready now to do away with capitalist social relationships and to create socialism. There's no, the only thing that's missing now is a majority will, majority desire and wish and consciousness and understanding. That's the only thing missing. The technology is there. The history is there behind us. Capitalism has risen to prominence and has now outlived its usefulness. So when the Socialist Party is challenged tonight to say, what is our programme, what is our system, what is our method for getting there? We don't want to sound glib. And I gave a one-word answer, education. And I don't mean to sound glib. But really, there is no other way. There is no magic wand. There is no way of setting an example of socialism within a capitalist system of society, because that's a pure contradiction in terms. What we need to do, and it's already happening around us, there's enormous discontent with capitalism. There are millions of people in all parts of the world who are bitterly and violently opposed to what capitalism is doing to them. What we're trying to do in the Socialist Party is to show, through the spoken and written word, we're showing and we're building the fact that there is an alternative system of society. It's ours for the taking. But every change in history has always been preceded by people talking about what they're going to do, why they're going to do it, why they need this change. So we have nothing to apologise for in using the spoken and the written word to do just that. And of course now using the internet to do just that. We are building consciousness, we are using education, and we're describing what the socialist alternative is. So let me finish for a minute or two, for my part, just by explaining once again and very clearly what socialism is and why we need it. Socialism is a global system of society in which all resources are owned in common. Socialism means common ownership of everything. Socialism means democratic control of everything. So that includes every form of wealth is owned in common and democratically controlled. In a socialist system of society, there would be no private ownership or state ownership whatsoever. And therefore, there would be no currency whatsoever. So in the Socialist Party, we campaign for a moneyless society. And we work very hard to propagate that idea, to try to educate our fellow workers that that is the way forward, that is the only solution. And we're interested in building our numbers, exponentially if possible, in order to achieve that. Because the only way that we're going to achieve that change is through a majority of people reaching the conclusion that we've reached, that socialism is the only answer. And we've just heard from a friend who I've not met before, who said that she's been coming here just for a short while. At first she thought that this was unrealistic, then she decided it was realistic, and now it sounds like she's doing a great job helping to teach other people likewise. And this sounds almost like a plant. I've never met her before, I promise you. But it's a good example. Here's somebody who's materialised, so to speak, since I was last speaking at this location. And I'm sure there's nothing unique or extraordinary in that sense about her. She, like many other people, has reached these conclusions because everything is forcing us in this direction. There's a lot of things working on our side, a lot of pressures around us which are supporting our case and endorsing what we say. That's really the object, that's the example, that's leading by example, is we just point to all of the contradictions of capitalism, all of the insanities of capitalism, and as a result of looking at those insanities, we're getting more and more people gradually to subscribe to the socialist solution. So I would urge all of you tonight to stay in touch with socialist ideas, and indeed to subscribe yourselves to this as the only practical solution to the problems that we face. Thank you very much.
Thank you all for coming, for inviting me here, and for the lovely discussion. I think we have to be as realistic as possible with whatever we do. So if we want really society to change and to have an impact, we have to be able to measure it, to know that it's having an effect, and that we're actually helping someone else, and not just ourselves, or that we think we are helping someone else or maybe ourselves. And in order to do that, we have to understand how systems evolve and how the interconnections are made. So I believe that in order to change society, you need four conditions. And unless you have all these four conditions, it's not going to happen. Okay? And why do I say that? Because I know, because of history, shows that. We've known that some of the things that we preach are good and they should be done, or they sound like they're good and should be done, but we've actually not done them. And the reason is because those four conditions didn't converge. And those are, you have the vision, which is your philosophy, your way you want to do things, or your goal to reach. You need the resources to build those things, both physical and mental and emotional, the resources. You need the technology to enable that to happen, and you need the plan. If you don't have those four, if just one of these is missing, it's not going to happen. And we shouldn't confuse the goal with the means. So the goal is not to have no ownership, is not to have no money, is not to have democratic participation. The goal is to maximize well-being, minimize suffering. Okay? That's the goal. So while no ownership, no money, democratic participation, they sound like good ideas, and I agree with them, and I think they should be done, it does not mean that that's what actually works, okay? So until you actually try it, and you test it, you don't know if that's the means to achieve your goal. So I think the only thing we have to do is to keep the goal in mind, which is reduce suffering, maximize well-being, live as happily and as best as we can, and have a plan where we try things out, and we actually see if they work. And if they don't, be open to change your mind. Right? Because stubbornness plus power equals problems. Okay? So this whole thing that we're doing sounds like an excellent idea and might lead to a prosperous future for everyone. But if we are stubborn and we don't change our mind in face of new evidence, if we gain power, we could do much more damage than the system that's already in place. Or may not. I don't know. The only thing I know is if we're not ready to change our mind, we're not going to do anything useful. So just be open to new ideas, share your knowledge, discuss, participate, collaborate, and move forward together.